I think in terms of us appearing together as a couple, it was so liberating to be like, yeah, finally, now you all know what I am, who I am, you know? Now our queerness is something that's identifiable by looking at us.
Welcome to LoveLink, your guide to love and sex in all forms. We're your hosts, Simone Humphrey and Sina Simon. Today we're talking to Simone's cousin Rachel and her girlfriend Ada about the evolution of their relationship following Ada's male to female gender transition. Ada, then Adam, and Rachel met on OkCupid and it was love at first sight. 5 years later, they're living together as a lesbian couple.
So welcome, Rachel and Ada. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
So to start us out, we'd love to know kind of how long you guys have been together and how the two of you met and what drew you to each other.
Do you want to go? Should I go?
We met through an algorithm, which I think is very fitting, given my interest in data and creativity. But yeah, we met on OkCupid. So I found you through
a
recommendation. Yeah, I found you. It was one of those things where they're like, you might like this
human. You should
check
out this idiot.
A friend of yours who recommended or
no,
the app?
The whatever, like, on OkCupid at least.
The perfect match.
Yeah. You answer a bunch of questions, and I guess
it'll be like, you have a 94% match with this jerk, you know? And you're like, oh, okay, I'll give him 5 stars or something.
And how many years ago was this?
5 years ago. A little, just like 5 years and 2 months or something like that. But yeah.
Okay, so an algorithm matched you, and then where did you go on your first date?
5 Leaves in Williamsburg. Bougie. We're like the poster children, or maybe I'm the poster child for OkCupid because I went on one and only one OkCupid date. It was Rachel. First shot out of the gate. I was like, well, done.
Can sign off.
That was not my experience.
I also was seeing 2 other people while I started dating Ada, but
whatever.
I dropped them
like hot rocks.
Like hot potatoes.
What were your initial impressions of each other when you first met?
Out of my league. She walked up. In fact, I think it was a good thing because she walked up. I mean, we had chatted on OkCupid. We decided to date after sending back and forth, like, you know, I think the first time one of us contacted the other, it was like 4 sentences and then 4 sentences back. And then it was like a paragraph and a half and then like 3 paragraphs and then 5 paragraphs. And like they just kept getting bigger and bigger. So finally we're like, we should meet. And she walked up. I was uncharacteristically early. I was early. And she walked up and I went, my heart just sank. I was like, oh God. She's way too good looking. There's no way this girl's going to be interested in me. But so I think it was a good thing because it made me go, fuck it. I'll just, you know, whatever. I'll just be myself, eat some food, and it'll be fine. And so then I was like a total nerd the whole time. I think it opened me up to actually be myself. And I got a burger with an egg on it, and I dropped it on my shirt.
And you were sexy.
I knew that I was going to marry her after our first date.
Wow.
And I've never had that feeling about anyone else, even though I have even been engaged to someone else. I just met you and I was like, oh, yeah, you. And so after that, I like went to a bar and talked to one of my friends who was a bartender, but he now runs his own Reiki practice here in Brooklyn. And I was like, oh, I'm like, I met this person, yeah, and he was like, oh, totally, go for that. That sounds very, like, stable and wise.
What did you see in Ada that made you want to marry her?
When I met you and I spoke with you, it sounds like a cliche, but I was like, oh, I've already clearly known this person, the way that we were able to talk and our interests, and I never had met someone that reminded me so much of myself but was also like a completely different entity. I was like, oh, this person gets, like, it just it lit me up and was really exciting. So I was like, oh yeah, that's cool. And the thing is though, this is not to say that like, take what I said with a grain of salt, of course, because you know we've gotten in fights and like nearly broken up and things like that. It was just this like very primal like gut feeling that I was like, oh, this person.
But it's funny, I actually didn't realize that you went and checked in with somebody right after and they confirmed a feeling.
Yes.
Because that happened to me too. I actually had two, so I was living with roommates in Bushwick and one roommate was home when I got back and he was the guy who was actually like, he's still a great friend of mine and he was on OkCupid and I was sort of watching him go on date on date on date on date and I was still heartbroken over this girl who had dumped me like, I think 1 year earlier. And you know, and like over it, but in like big quotes, like not really over it at all. And so I had never done online anything before. And this, I think, you know, I don't think Tinder existed yet, which is
Bumble,
weird to think about.
Yeah, or any of that. Those other apps.
So OkCupid was like the new interesting thing. And I watched him, you know, go and like have interesting dates and also just get to hook up and shit. And I was like, yeah, sure. Like, why not? I'm sick of dating in my little like theater crowd. It's so incestuous. I was like, I feel like I've dated everybody that was even interesting anyway, you know? So I got home from the date and I had a different friend of mine waiting in my bedroom because we were going to do a little recording session.
Oh my God, it was Matthew Marsh.
Matthew Marsh, yeah. So he was off in the bedroom, but the first friend, Josh, was in his bedroom. So I walked in there and he's like, how'd the date go? And I proceed to be like, well, I mean, it was really nice. She's great. But I was like, I just really feel like maybe she was like, she's too. And then bloop, my phone buzzes. And I was like, hold on. And I pulled it out, looked at it. And Rachel had sent me a one sentence text that just said, by the way, you are such a fox. And I was like, oh, it went great. No, yeah, this is awesome. Yep,
that's date a
went
great
well.
Text.
And so then I went into the bedroom.
No more, no less.
And told the other friend who was waiting for, he had like, I was like late getting back from the date because it actually was a really great date. And so he was like asleep in my bed already. And so I like woke him up and told him all about Rachel. And he was like, this is going to be the one that gets you over that girl. I was like, I can feel it. This is the one. And I was like, okay. You know, and of course, in the moment, it's like, Rachel was all like, oh, I knew. And I was like, it's doubtful. I don't know.
What a relieving text to get.
Oh my God. Yeah, completely.
But it sounds like there was an immediate magical chemistry between two of you.
Very accurate.
And that you knew pretty quickly that you guys wanted to stay together for a while.
Yeah.
So, I mean, tell us a little bit at that point. Because Rachel, I've known you for your whole life.
Yes.
And I know that you have dated women. I know you've dated men. At that point, like, how did you identify in terms of your sexual orientation?
Well, on OkCupid, I had listed myself as bisexual, and Ada caught me off guard because I was convinced at that point that I would only, like, the long-term goal would be to be with a woman. Not that one can, like, choose, but I'm like, I have dated enough men at this point, and I'm kind of over it, and so my next big love, I want to be a woman, because I got out of a long hetero cis relationship and I was like, this just doesn't really work.
Which was also
for
the
me.
Engagement that fell apart too.
I was like, I need thing. Something more queer.
And at that point Ada was Adam.
Yes.
And I was kind of pissed off, like that was the one I was like, why does it have to be a like a straight boy, like really, like that we were done.
Although,
with
this. But I also think up front, I had listed myself as bi on
yes,
there. So. I know that's not that different, but like, I do think at the very least, you were like, oh, it's a bi boy, not a straight boy.
Yeah.
But still a cis boy. Yeah.
How soon did it take to get comfortable with the idea that your next big love could be with Adam, now Ada? Because you were thinking, I'm going to be with a man.
Radical acceptance, kind of my mantra, because I just loved, or I was, even at that point, I mean, I wasn't in love with Ada, but I was just attracted to Ada as Adam, and I was like, why should I dictate the gender of who I fall in love with? And even if it doesn't match up with what I thought would happen, that's fine. Although it, spoiler, it did work.
In the your long-term plan actually fit.
I even remember saying to my sister over lunch one day that I was like, oh, if I could change anything about our relationship, I would change Ada's gender. But that's on me and like being selfish. And I don't think you'd even known that. So
no, actually, I don't even know if I know that you had said that until right this moment. Yeah.
So Ada, mm-hmm. at what point did you start thinking about transitioning?
Well, okay, so that's like a...
Let's unpack that.
Let's unpack that, yeah. In my early 20s, like, there's all this stuff that you can trace in my childhood we're now looking back on, and I'm like, oh, yeah, like early feelings. But I really wasn't conscious of them at the time. And then early 20s is about when I started being like, oh, this is something that's interesting to me. Teens was really like, it's interesting to me secretly. Early 20s was like, now it's a fantasy. And I think just by the very nature of it, and I think this is where like it gets, you know, for people who are looking to poke holes in it, it gets... into territory that becomes a little easier to do, because in that moment I thought it was a fetish, you know. I was cross-dressing in private. I would have a lover here and there who'd be kind of down to play, you know, but even then it was kind of like in the bedroom kind of thing.
And that's how it was disclosed to me.
That's like, true. That's how it started right in off our the relationship. Bat. Yeah.
So I knew from day one, but it wasn't like I'm trans. It's like,
no, it was like,
I like to cross dress.
Yeah, I like to cross dress. This is a thing that's really interesting to me. I like to do it in bed, you know, or even just like
around the house.
Like around the house for my own masturbatory excitement, you know.
Rachel, what was it like the first time you saw Ada in women's clothes?
When was the first time you saw me in women's clothes? Was it when I sent you those pictures from the... I like put on your corset and sent it to you like a picture at work. Was it
probably
that?
I don't know. It's hard because so much of this blurs together. But also sometimes I would like come home from work and Ada would surprise me being like dressed up head to toe.
But again, always in a like sexy way, you know, always in like a corset and stockings and whatever, you know.
Yes.
I'd force my feet into Rachel's high heels, which was always
and then
the
we
nightmare.
Would do it non-sexually for Halloween and some parties and things like that.
But that was like, even that was later once it was more established as like, this is something I'd like to do, but I'm just maybe too scared to do it.
So when did it shift? When did the shift happen to moving from framing cross-dressing as something more sexual in your relationship
mm-hmm.
Into, no, I actually want to transition to being a woman and yeah. this is my identity now.
Uh-huh.
How did you have that conversation with Rachel for the first time?
I think... Well, therapy, yeah.
God bless our therapists.
God bless our therapists. I think it was something that first I had to become comfortable talking to my therapist about. I had gone to see my therapist not for trans reasons initially. I had gone because, funnily enough, I actually had like an anger management problem. And you know, and combined with sort of like anxiety and blah blah blah, and so I had gone to see her for that originally, and as we sort of unpacked all that other stuff and did a lot of, she does like CBT, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy, and so we'd sort of worked on a lot of things, and then there came a point where there was kind of a big incident. I was like, I think I need more help, so I saw a psychiatrist and I got on some psych meds that I'm on to this day, and I love them, they're wonderful. But so it was kind of like after getting out of crisis mode about that opened the door to be like, okay, so now what? And I started realizing that this was a thing that was just on my mind all the time, and that I, you know, that the fantasy of it was actually not just a bedroom thing. The fantasy was, I wish I could live this every day. I hate, you know, I was not having fun in a boy body. I was not having fun in those gender roles. I was not having fun in boy clothes. You know, in the past, I had found sort of like punk rocky excuses to wear eyeliner and nail polish and stuff, you know. But like, I wished that I could just wear makeup all, you know, every day. Like, I was so dissatisfied with what I was seeing and what I was feeling all the time. And so I think that was the nature of the fantasy. It sort of blossomed into being like, God, I just wish this could be all the time, every day, and not only secluded to the, or sequestered into this kind of secret kinky bedroom life, which granted is totally fun and totally valid also. But yeah, I sort of just wanted more. And so I think at first the conversation wasn't even like, oh, I want to transition right now. It was like, I have this fantasy of doing it. And so I talked to Rachel about the fantasy of it, you know? And I think there'd be times where that would lead into sexy things. And then there was also times where it was just like heart to hearts, you know, about that being a desire of mine. Do you agree with that?
Yes, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
And how did you respond, Rachel?
I have been so open to all of this from day one, and however this evolution has gone. So, yeah, it's hard because I know with a question that we get asked often is like, what date did Ada tell you and how did you feel? And then what, and it all really blurs together. I would say that you shared often after therapy sessions, and then we would mm-hmm. talk about it together.
Yeah, there wasn't like a, I feel like another trans narrative you hear a lot that I think is, it truly probably is the most common one. No, I'm gonna resend that. But even, that's probably not true. But I think especially later in life, there's a, and especially with people who, with trans, you know, men, trans women, whatever, who are into women, because I think it's a lot easier when you're into boys, you know? I think the jump from, oh, maybe I'm not a gay guy, maybe I'm a woman who wants to be with men, is an easier jump than, I feel like I'm a straight person, but now I have this desire, so what does that mean? Like, am I, you know, am I now in a lesbian relationship? The answer is, yeah, I am, but that's a weird jump to make. So I think oftentimes what happens is that the trans person will end up in a super cis hetero relationship with a super cis hetero lady, and then have this moment where they decide they want to do it, and there's like a coming out, which I think is more the situation where you can be like, yeah, October 27, 2000, whatever, like I came out to my wife, and it was this huge thing, and you hear about the wife having to adjust, and, you know, and maybe they stay together, maybe they don't, blah, blah, blah. But with Rachel, it wasn't like that. It was just like, we started our relationship, we always used to say, like, even before any of this started becoming a big conversation, that outwardly, no one sees that we're in a queer relationship at the time.
Inwardly, we've been queer
since day one. And we have been queer since day one.
So, in fact, now the exterior matched the interior, and I was thrilled, and I felt guilty because, as I said to you guys, like, something like the one thing that I wished was different about our relationship was that it, people could see the kind of queerness that it is, but no one could. And like, oh, now that's happening, and now like Ada is becoming Ada, and I was like, oh, is she like reading vibes that like this is a secret want and fantasy on my part? But.
And what was it like to be with your friends and be in public and, you know, be a couple as you are now, as a lesbian couple?
Yeah.
You mean post-trans?
Post-trans, yeah.
The first handful of times by its very nature is just terrifying, you know. Partially because it's like it's a brand new thing. I think the first time I'd started doing it in public, I was on hormones, but it was the early days. I hadn't really done much yet. You know, I was god-awful at makeup, you know. And so, you know, the concern was less even about like the appearance of the two of us. Like, that has never been a discomfort to me. It was always about, like, and still is even to date, is always me being incredibly worried that I just look like a man, you know, who's failing completely at conveying the, this is an unfair word to use, but the illusion that I'm a woman, you know? So I think a lot of it was about that for the in the early days, but I don't know. I think in terms of us appearing together as a couple, it was so liberating to be like, yeah, finally, now you all know what I am, who I am, you know? Now our queerness is something that's identifiable by looking at us, you know, and people, it's funny, I don't know that I could necessarily elaborate on how people treat us differently. I mean, I think the answer is people haven't much, other than things like switching pronouns and stuff. But yeah, I think it's just been very freeing in the way that they say, you know, the truth sets you free, you know?
Hi, Lovelink listeners. Our group practice, Modern Mind, is located in New York City with offices in Brooklyn and Manhattan, offering in-person and virtual psychotherapy. We provide individual, couples, and group therapy, as well as ketamine-assisted psychotherapy in conjunction with a psychiatry prescriber. Therapy is a powerful experience that can transform your life and help you live it to its full potential. We're here to help take you where you want to go. To find out more about our practice, visit www.modernmind.co or email info@modernmind.co to be connected with one of our therapists. So it sounds like the transition has had a profound impact on you because now you feel like you're more in your identity. You as a couple are more in your queer identity. What other changes has it been like after the transition as a couple?
Lots. Hormones are a hell of a drug, but in a lot of good ways too. Like, I don't know. I can't pick apart what exactly might be hormones and like a chemical change, and what might also be you getting older. And
yeah, the line is blurred.
The line gets blurred, but from a emotional side of things, like, Ada is a much more sensitive partner and more patient, and she a better listener.
Working on it still, but yeah.
And then
that's the hormones talking.
Totally.
And more compassionate, a lot more empathy, way less angry.
Yeah.
And then in terms of sex, our whole sex life has changed, but not in a bad way. It's just different.
Would you feel comfortable sharing a little bit about how it's changed?
Like, how detailed do you want to get?
However detailed you feel comfortable with.
I mean, I feel like tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like we're super comfortable.
Yeah.
I'm almost like, I'm worried we'll say too much and like gross everybody out.
Yes. You will gross us out.
Okay.
No.
Well, we don't have penetrative sex anymore for the most part.
No, in fact, we tried it once recently, and it was super weird. Yeah. I was worried that it was, that I've been wanting to try. We haven't, you know, we hadn't done it for like a year and year plus or something. And
not sex.
No, yeah. penetrative sex. And also, to be clear, I mean, like, we mean straight penetrative sex, like me penetrating her with a
Penis.
A penis, yeah, which is, even that's a gross word. We don't call it that in the house. We have cute nicknames for it, such as Uber Clit, or Rachel coined the term gnocchi.
It's her little gnocchi.
It's a little gnocchi. She calls me Gnocchiarina of Time.
I love that.
I don't know.
Um, Yeah, it's like penis, ew. But yeah, we, you know, we did it once recently because I'd really been interested to find out, like, is this something, because there's also, you know, there's the big question that everybody's always interested in, which is fine, of, you know, of like, will I get the surgery someday? Jury's out. It comes down to that question of like, do I wish I had a vagina? Undoubtedly, yes. If I could flip a switch and just have a perfect grill on this very second, I'd do it in a heartbeat. You know, but the reality of it is that it's a massive invasive surgery and there's a lot of complications that can happen. The recovery time is lengthy and a big hassle, and you know,
and so it might change how you experience pleasure.
Sure, right. Like you know, I think the question has become like, or became like, what would it be, would the shift be so huge that I realized I didn't enjoy it and now there's no going back, you know? So one of the big questions that I've had is like, well, now that I've been a year plus into this, like, do I miss that? And we tried it, and granted, like, Rachel, for just stupid and doctor-y reasons, has been off birth control. So we did do it with a condom, which I always had hated anyway, just because like girl, gnocchi was never that big to begin with, and like now it was even less so, and so like I just hate it. They fall off, like, and I can't feel anything through them. So I've just never been a huge fan. I know that's a common thing to say, but so maybe it would be a little different once you're back on birth control, and we could try it the other way. But I was like, yeah, this is awful. Like I actually stopped. We didn't finish. I stopped halfway through and was like, yeah, this is not it. You know.
And why did you decide to stop having penetrative sex in the first place?
Well, I mean, I want to hear your thoughts about this too, but
that was actually something that like came up with us because I was like, I see you so much as a woman, I do not want to have penetrative sex with you, because it's funny for me being as queer as I am, like when I think about the relationships that I have with women and the way that I have sex with women, it's very different than the way that I have sex with men. So I was like, I want to have lady sex with you.
Well, like, and historically you said to me, like, in lady sex, you're the top.
I'm the top. So, yeah. And with
boys, you've been the bottom.
Yes.
I used to be the top.
Yeah.
It used to be about, like, me fucking Rachel, you know? And, you know, which was fine. And for the record, like, that sex at the time was excellent.
And
like,
valid, you know, and valid fun.
And wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, we had a great time. But now it's really the opposite. Now it's kind of like about Rachel fucking me, you know, or a paradigm of like mutualness,
mutual fucking.
Yeah. Or like, I mean, something that's wonderful that I think even straight couples sometimes don't explore enough that is wonderful is like just masturbating next to each other, just having somebody present with you while you're kind of doing the thing that everybody does best, you know? And there's something about like having somebody there and just sort of being with you and touching you, like even just like caresses or even just having that energy next to you is something, there's something so wonderful and, I don't know, connecting about watching your partner in an incredibly private moment, you know, being let into that moment. And so there's a lot of that too, you know.
What have you learned about yourself, this is a question for both of you, about yourselves as sexual beings through this process? Because your sex life sounds like it's changed a lot. Both of your roles have changed from more dominant, more submissive, or however you want to frame it.
Sure, yeah.
I am so much happier in this role. And the implications of that too. I mean, I hope that we don't break up. I'd like to stay with you forever. But I'm like, oh, this is the kind of sex that, like, if I have sex with a, like, this is the only kind of sex that I want to be having, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
This has helped me realize.
Well, and like, sorry, go ahead.
No.
Oh, and like in the past, we've always said that we do like polyamory light, you know, like LITE. In that, like, we're not like an open swinger couple, but you know, we've let each other kind of, we've had like extracurricular time together and also apart, and nowadays, I mean, we still have an interest in that kind of stuff, but like, I am like, God, I don't know how, for like a first-time partner, unless it's somebody who's already really familiar with a trans femme body,
how to navigate
that. There's such specific stuff that Rachel's acquired the skill.
And it's
of
been like a learning curve with a lot of communication about figuring out
for both of us
what works. And having someone else like
I just feel like I would spend the whole time like having to teach them how my body works because it's so different than the norm, you know. Because it's like it's kind of like, you know, if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. And I'm like, well, it moves like a penis and it looks like a penis, but it's not a penis. And it doesn't function really like one now, you know?
So aside from having to teach another partner kind of what you like, I mean, do you think that there's other reasons why your interest in opening up your relationship has gone down?
Is that like lesbian U-Haul effect?
A little bit. I mean, I gotta be honest. I also think on some level, like, I have perceptibly noticed changes in the way, I don't know, many ways that I just feel from being on testosterone blockers and estrogen. And I mean, it's funny like how often this whole experience starts affirming stereotypes about men. Like, it's so stupid. And I want to be like, I'm a liberal progressive and like that's stupid. And like, I'm like, oh no, like now I feel like incredibly more emotional. And I'm like, I don't have that urge to like sow my wild seed anymore. Like, you know, I'm like, yeah, I just want to cuddle. And I'm like, but I like my partner, you know?
Right. There's some like concrete biological changes.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And maybe you're also embodying more of the socialized experience.
Yeah, too. Yeah, a new gender role. Why not? Yeah.
I don't know. It could also be like, you know, we've been together for 5 years now. We're getting a bit older, and like the needs that I had when I was 25
are different
than they are now. And it's not that I'm closed off to anything. It's just, it's not important. It was totally important when we started dating. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, when in Rome, maybe?
Yeah, we can like, but I it's think not we so- sought it out before, and now it's kind of like, we're more interested in like, if it happens, if we find out that somebody's interested, then great, then we're open to it. But I don't know that we're doing what we did before of like having one of those creepy couples OkCupid profiles.
Which we totally did.
Which we totally did.
Have you noticed any changes in Rachel as a partner since the transition?
Hand shelf. yes, undoubtedly. For one thing, it's funny, like we've talked about like the top bottom dynamic in the bedroom, but there's this like actually sort of, I mean, it's weird. I hate putting things in this binary paradigm, but it's like Rachel went from being like, I hate the way of saying this, but whatever. It feels like Rachel was the girl in the relationship and I was the boy, and now it's flip-flopped. And not that Rachel has any interest in becoming a man in any way, but like she kind of wears the pants in the house now, and I
think
love
I was always
that.
Wearing the pants, but like
are there other surprises you've had through the transition, discoveries you've had about what it's like to be a woman?
Oh God, yeah, every
day. What's
the
biggest one for you?
I think
the patriarchy is real.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like as goofy, you know, as stereotypical as that sounds, it's really true. Like, it's really interesting to remove oneself from being just in terms of race and gender and everything, from arguably the most privileged role to one that now by definition isn't, you know, and part of that is the trans part, but part of it is the woman part, the female part. And it's been like a huge one. Yeah. Is like how men treat me. And there's been ways in which it's been really positive. Like my best guy friends, like now they like, I don't know, now they, it's not like they flirt with me, but now they do that flirty rapport that guys do with girls that, you know, that I've done to women before. which for me is like affirm. I'm like, oh my God, thank you for like treating me in the way I want to be treated. You know, they'll like, even like, you know, when we show up and hug, they'll like kiss me on the cheek now, which never would have happened before. So, you know, and like my buddy Josh, like now he's like, hey babe, like what's up? What do you want to do? You know, which is so lovely and affirming. But then like a more complicated one is like, I get catcalled now, which is crazy, you know? And that's fucked up because it's like, and I think there's a, there's a cis version of this that exists of like, I kind of want to turn around and be like, you know, pig, but at the same time, I'm like, but thank you. Like you kind of made my day, you know, I guess I look pretty, you know? So like those kind of dynamics, like I've noticed ways in which I truly believe that being trans can be as much a rejection of masculinity as it is an adopting of femininity. And so I've been trying to examine the ways in which I'd like to shed the behaviors and habits that I acquired over 30 years of being a dude, you know? And one, like a huge one that I'm still working on, but is like talking over people. Men just talk over women constantly. And I'll still find myself doing it and be like, ah, Jesus, stop that, you know? But I've noticed that, not a lot yet, but it'll happen to me. Like, men start kind of being a little interrupty and talky over of me. Although I have the habit of, like, holding my own in that. So, like, it's kind of like the boy kicks back in and I'm like, nah, I'm not done yet, you know? Which is kind of good because I'm like, every woman should assert herself like that. So in some ways, maybe I can be kind of an
example. It also makes me think about my femininity and masculinity because then I'm like, am I more masculine because I will talk over people? Like, and that's something that I'm trying to work on doing.
We're both trying to listen better. Yeah.
That's like theme of 2018. Better listeners.
Yeah. Pressure, again, this is sort of it's two things. Again, it's like trans experience stacked on top of womanly experience, but the pressure to look beautiful, totally. Like, I completely understand now why there is such, why eating disorders are so common and why many women have such awful self-image problems. I mean, honestly, like, Rachel, I hope you don't mind me saying this, but, like, Rachel has big self-image problems. And, I mean, problems is a poopy word, but, like, but, you know, but challenges, right? And now I feel like I much more intimately start have an understanding of where that comes from. You know, like, yes, I worry about just failing and looking like a man, but even if I'm feeling confident about looking like a woman, I in the mirror now, I'm like, oh, I wish I had more of a butt. I wish my whatever ribs weren't so big. I need to lose these love handles. I feel like I fucked up my makeup today and it looks awful, or, you know, like I need a haircut. I'm not coordinating outfits well enough, or I've worn the inappropriate. Oh, that's another thing. Appropriateness of outfits to places, you know,
in ways that you never felt as a man.
No, I mean, a man is like, you, there's pretty much like, there's like three modes. It's like, you know, am I dressing in jeans and a t-shirt, or am I showing up, you know, in like whatever, like office, cash, something like that, you know, or is it a formal event and I'm wearing a suit? That's pretty much it. And, you know, it's like men's fashion is all about like minutia. It's all like, what's the cut of your lapel? And did you get the thing tailored? And, you know, and which it's funny, I was historically awful at that shit as a guy because I didn't care. I didn't like those clothes. So whatever, you know, but now I'm totally into it and fascinated. And like, now I'm like, how do I dress well as a woman? Not only because it makes me feel good to do that, but also because I want people to perceive me as beautiful. Like, it feels like a failure if I feel like people aren't perceiving me that way, which is a thing that I never really felt as a guy, you know?
Are there any aspects of masculinity that you've wanted to retain?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, kind of like what we were just talking about, I think there's a social confidence that inherently comes, and not to say that women can't or don't have it, but there's just again, you have that privilege of being, you know, of having status in a room. And while I'm trying to now check that privilege and learning in the ways in which I find it distasteful, like there's a confidence that comes with it that I'm like, no, I'm going to hang on to that because I actually think women should have that. And if I've got it already, then great. I think it's a positive thing. There's also, I mean, dumb things in like, I'll always like action movies, you know, like I know, again, not to say that women don't, but I'm like, you know, you know, a big one is I've done it already a lot. Like I cuss all the time. Again, not to say that any of these things can't be, I think they're just stereotypically more masculine traits, you know. Something that I've been looking at recently is I'm not super satisfied with my voice. Like even now I'm trying to like speak up here and like kind of like a head voice, but you know, when we wake up in the morning, I'm talking like this, you know. I mean, it's funny, I can't even really do it right now. No, truly it is. I mean, I could have spent this whole interview talking like this, you know, but it's like I'm trying to sort of convey a different voice up here, but right now it's still, to me, it still just sounds like a guy, like almost like a gay guy. I sound like a gay guy, you know. I'm kind of lispy and up here, and there's this whole, if you ever hear a trans woman who sounds like a woman, it's one of two things. Either they were just blessed to already have that kind of feminine tenor up there, or they've done a whole lot of work to learn the tricks in order to do that.
If you were to give a piece of advice mm-hmm. to someone who is transitioning, mm-hmm. What advice would you give them?
I think the advice I would give is this, is that all of the doubts that you are undoubtedly having are valid, but at the same time, one of the best things that I ever read on like a trans forum was that If I think there's a big worry of like, oh, am I just blowing a sexual fetish out of proportion? Like, you know, am I questioning something that actually isn't real? And the answer is, cis people don't ask these questions about themselves. The very fact of you asking these questions and having an interest or a desire in this is enough justification that it is really worth examining and really could be a real thing. I spent so much time that I think was necessary, but truly that I wish I hadn't spent fretting over whether or not I had the right to do this. And the answer is yes. Yes, you have the right. Absolutely. And you don't need to have been suicidal or feel like your earth wouldn't have been shattered otherwise to pursue this. I think that's like the biggest piece of advice. And then I think the other one is if you have gotten to the place where you feel like it is for sure something that you want, don't wait. Oh my God, I just wish I could have done this way, way sooner. Partially for like very like clinical reasons of, you know, I didn't do it until pretty much my like 30th birthday. And the older you get, the more diminishing returns you get on hormones. And thankfully they're working well. Like my face has softened a lot. Obviously all the emotional things I do have, you know, I've grown some boobs, like, you know, there's still big changes, but like if you see somebody who transitions, for example, in their starts hormones in their teens, by the time they hit their 20s, like you would never, they pass so easily. And then even like early 20s, still great. Late 20s, it's a little harder. And then, but like right about in your 30s, your growth plates stop changing. So like your bone structure, you're stuck with it now. I mean, largely. So it just means that if it's important to you to really be as feminine appearing as possible, then that means you're now headed for things like surgeries, which I, you know, I would like to do, but also it's like they're so expensive and they're such a hassle. And again, it's like it's invasive. There's recovery times. So I'm just like, oh my God, just do it. Pull the trigger, you know, because whatever bullshit you're going to have to go through, you're going to have to go through anyway. So why not just do it now and not 5 years from now, when and kick yourself for not having done it 5 years sooner, yeah. You know,
give yourself permission. And it, I think also taking hormones when you're younger, it's not as if it's irreversible.
That's right. That's right.
So it's not like a surgery where you can't change your mind later.
That's right. You can always back off of that. The only part of it that you can't really back off of is once you grow boobs, you've got boobs, unless you, then you have to go get a surgery to get rid of them if you don't want them. But yes, like if I tomorrow was like, oh my God, this has been a huge mistake, I don't want to do this anymore, I could stop hormones and pretty much go back. Oh, Rachel just made such a sad face. I don't want to do that at all. You know, that and other things like my legal name change went through. So like legally I'm Ada Westfall now. So now I'm Ada Westfall, you know? So it's not to say that this isn't something that you should feel, I think it's worth taking the time to feel sure about it. But once you do, do it. Don't be scared of starting. Just start, you know.
And Rachel, as the partner of someone who's transitioning, what advice would you give to other partners who might be in the supportive role or who might be dealing with things during this process?
I can only speak to, I think, experiences similar to mine in the sense that, like, I am attracted to women, so having a partner switch from M to F is not a big deal. I could imagine it being a big deal if someone is like a straight woman and their husband, that happens. Like, so my advice won't work for that. But yeah, just radical acceptance and everything changes. Nothing changes. That's about it.
But, you know, I mean, something that Rachel has been incredible. And again, like she said, it's been, we've had the luxury of Rachel already being into this. So, you know, there was nothing to like get over. But what, something that Rachel has been really wonderful at, and it's always a struggle and we continue to work on it, but it has just been listening.
Well, it's funny talking about this. I'm like, this could apply not just for a lesbian couple where you have a cis partner and trans partner. It could just be any kind of relationship of just listening to the beautiful human that is in your life and trying to like communicate and share with you. Mm-hmm. Everything's a lot better when you're listening improves.
I think that's another sort of piece of advice that I think is a great piece of advice for all relationships, and maybe it's a little obvious, but communicate. It's just, you know, I'm baffled by relationships when I see them where people keep secrets from each other. I mean, obviously dumb things like a surprise party, whatever, but like, you know, when you, everything is out on the table for us. And I mean, we have a rule that if somebody else asks us to keep one of us to keep a secret from the other one, no dice. Absolutely not. There are no secrets in our relationship. And thus everything is on the table. And I think in some ways the only reason we've even made it this far and not broken up when times got real hard is because we've been fiercely committed to communicating and communicating respectfully.
Well, thanks so much for being with us, guys.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode. To stay in touch with us, sign up for our quarterly newsletter at lovelink.co, where we share our favorite articles and resources about love, sex, and relationships. Also, in future episodes, we plan on answering listener questions. So if you'd like your questions featured on our show, send us a voice memo using the Anchor app or send it directly to our email,
info@lovelink.co. And if you have a second, truly, the best way you can help support us is to rate and review the show in Apple Podcasts. Just scroll to the bottom of the Lovelink show page and let us know what you think. We thank you all again so much for listening. We're truly touched you take the time out of your busy schedule for us. Until next time. Mm-hmm.